Shopper Maniacs, you're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show, a holiday podcast about fun things. It's getting holiday over here. Chris, yeah. How are you?
It's cold, you know, which is, it's cool. I'm coming to terms with it. It's pretty normal. Yeah.
Hey, remember back in the day when it was just you and I and we would talk about websites and stuff? Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember that?
Okay.
Let's do that again.
I guess we could call it a rapid fire show. We kind of, I don't think we've retired that word necessarily, but we started just kind of naming episodes more about like what the content is inside of and stuff. So let's just do a regular old show, Dave. How about that? I have a few things written down that, you know, sometimes it's nice just to talk about what's going on in the industry and stuff. It was not too long ago. I came back from JamstackConf. That was pretty cool.
Tell me about JamstackConf. Did y'all I don't know, jam out some static sites or what?
Yeah, well, that's what's I have a million things to say about it. I don't think we could do a whole Jamstack show series of them, I'm sure. But the conference was fun. It was put on by Netlify, which, you know, I'm sure we're all aware of. Not a sponsor of this particular show, but they've sponsored us in the past. And they're, you know, it's a web host that like will run your build process and stuff, and is all CDN'd up. And there's a million things to talk about with Netlify, but it really does. If you're going to have a static site generated site, it works pretty darn well with that, because it will, you know, it'll run your static site generator for you, kind of. You know, you work dev and then you push it up and say, hey, run this command when you deploy, and it'll do that. And it works well with the Jamstack. So if you're just totally unfamiliar, like, why do Chris and Dave keep saying Jamstack? It's just this, I guess it's an acronym, JavaScript APIs markup, that Netlify kind of invented, or one of them there. And it's just kind of like, okay, an index.html file comes down and that's it. There's no, you know, it's not running PHP or Python or Ruby or anything, in which that, like, when that page is requested, server-side code is executing and it might connect to a database and, like, do stuff on the back end and then produce an HTML document and then come to your browser. That document is flat. It's just flat cached HTML, and it loads, you know, super fast. You know, I mean, backend sites can be fast too, but, you know, there's nothing complicated happening here. It can be super duper fast.
Yeah, not a single like logic server
nothing.
Cycle is spent.
Nothing.
Yeah,
and it's CDN'd out, and it's great. And then if anything else dynamic happens. Because that doesn't mean that nothing interesting can happen after it loads. You know, it's not like you can't have interactivity and data loaded from elsewhere in the world and all that fancy stuff. It could be a single page app. You could have a fancy old React app that then hits an API for data and populates itself and does things that way. You know? So I find it funny how, like, we think of, like, sometimes single page apps and this, like, fancy modern JavaScript architecture as being like the, you know, the cutting edge of how sites are built. But at the same time, there's a resurgence of static site generation too, which is kind of like a return to really old school site development, where it's just a bunch of HTML, CSS, and JavaScript files, you know, or if JavaScript at all. But how closely they live together. It's like the old and new are like sitting right besides each other and complementing each other. And then there's this interesting hybrid of creating a like largely static site generated site. But then when static site generation starts becoming impractical, like you have an e-commerce site with 10,000 products and your Jekyll build takes an hour or whatever it is, you don't have to do it that way. You can static site generate 60% of the site and then have slash product, which has like some query parameters, and that hits an API for the data that is in a cloud database somewhere. You know, it can kind of be half and half, which is so cool.
Yeah, I would. I mean, maybe they got into this, but I would just love to see a blog post, and architecture blog posts are kind of hard because they're so specific to some implementation or type of site. But like, I don't know, I'm thinking like I built a big, dumb, like e-commerce site as a static website, like, you know, 10,000 products or something. Urban Outfitters
right.
is now a static site or something. Like, that would be like, I don't know, that would just be like so interesting. I don't know if it's been done, or I don't know if like what the scale is, you know, because in my mind, I'm always like, oh, static sites, that's small. Duh, that's small. That's for small. But it, like you're saying, it doesn't have to be like it you know, you can just suck down the API.
And in fact, part of the keynote was very interesting in how you don't have to stop your current server-side architecture in which to dabble your feet in this, which is fascinating because, you know, some of the best technologies out there are ones that allow for incremental adoption, as they say. You know, mm-hmm. I think in a way that's, you could attribute some of the success of React to that, is that you don't necessarily have to go all in on all your entire architecture to use some React in your app. Now, whether that's true for your app or what, I think it's generally true industry-wide. And so part of this demo was that Netlify specifically has this kind of proxy feature on a URL by URL basis, meaning that you could spin up a Netlify site and say, like, at this particular URL is gonna be kind of statically served through Netlify land, but none of the rest of it is, or something. Yeah, so you can be like, oh, okay, I see. Like, if I want to run part of my app, or, you know, some subdirectory of my site, kind of static hosted style, you can, and then proxy the rest of it to wherever the rest of it is being served already. So you could dip your toes.
Yeah. No, I'd be just curious, like, how far people have pushed it, you know? But that said, there's also, you know, even in the static site world, a lot is kind of changed. I mean, I still use Jekyll. I love Jekyll. I have a weird, like, partisan, like, point of view on Jekyll. But, you know, like, Zach Leatherman's 11D apparently has, like, all the same features as Jekyll. And, like, you can even bring your own templating language, and it, 11D just spits out websites, and I'm like, well, I mean, it
does seem like Node is more appealing to me than Ruby for whatever reason, even though kind of who cares, because it's just static, you know, like, what does it matter really? But I feel like if I had to hack on it, I'd be more useful, and I guess you're kind of a Rubyist anyway, so you'd be comfortable hacking either way. But.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm also in the, like, try not to hack core camp. Hey, don't hack core.
No,
you know what you're doing.
What are we, kids? So. I don't have time for that. Anyway, you know, another interesting thing is this idea of, you know, Contentful was there. Have you seen them? Also not a sponsor, but we have them.
Like a, and that's like a, kind of like a GUI.
It's a CMS that's cloud on purpose. Like, there's no UI for it. It's totally UI-less CMS. It's just nice APIs for read and write. And, you know, Sanity has sponsored the show, too. They're like a spin-up-your-own CMS, but we have no opinion about your front end. We'll just host your data and be APIs for your back end. And, you know, you can do headless WordPress, and, you know, GraphQL's so big that you can put in front of anything. And there's all these, like, ways to give the back end some freedom too. Like, I think there's a lot of freedom happening here. It's freedom in the front end. Be like, I want to build the site however I want to build it, which is probably one of two ways, static site generated or SPA style, whatever that is. And that's freeing up the back end too, being like, well, I'm just going to pick a CMS that's kind of friendly to that idea then. But you can imagine, let's say you pick Contentful or Sanity or one of these things. There's way more, you know. Fauna is just straight up database, whatever. You pick one, and then you're like, well, okay, that leads me down the SPA route, I think, because then, you know, I spin up my React app and it's got to hit an API, and then when that data comes down, then I can start rendering what's going on. That's true, and that's totally a way that you can build that app, but there are so many other ways. There's the kind of like Nuxt or Next way in which that can be hitting those APIs for you instead and server-side rendering them, which is fascinating. Or even 11T could, during its build process, can hit those APIs and statically build pages based on that too. It's all intertwined.
Yeah, even like pre-commit hook, you just say like fetch and get data, you know. I like those, you know, Next and Nuxt, but they do, you know, I think they kind of buy you in, right, to quite a bit of architecture, right?
I haven't gone down that road. Yeah, it seems like it'd be hard to leave if you did it. Yeah.
And Next Just-ish made a big announcement about Next 2 or something, so I need to look into that. But I think they're going like all serverless or something. So
it does look cool. It looks like you get Cloud Functions stuff out of it, and that they use this term called monorepo, which, I mean, I guess it is what it is, but it looks interesting in that you could have like your node stack stuff in there. But then in their demos, they just have like a random PHP file sitting there, and that'll execute too. And you're like, okay, well, okay, that's cool.
Great. Oh, the evil things I can do. I got so much image magic, dark black image magic sitting in a PHP file. I could.
God, and then I was reading on Cloudflare's blog where they're like, think Cloud Functions are cool? We have this totally new architecture that is like Cloud Functions, except for that they don't need to run in a container. And containers have all this overhead, you know. Containers are like spinning up a whole little computer just to run some functions. The idea being that you need a computer to do some stuff, you know, you got to run Node or whatever. But also that they offer security that you can't break out of and do anything nefarious on the larger server. That's kind of the whole point.
Oh, so each function is its own process thread or something.
Right. I mean, that's the point of containers, period. But that's what Cloud Functions do, is they spin up really little fast containers. And Cloudflare says, we can do this without containers. There's this.
So it's pre-spun. You just have to. Yeah. Okay.
It's wild. Because they use some part of like the V8 engine or whatever. And there's something built into that that allows some like super, they're called isolates or something. And I hate to, you know, it's like we're delivering the news by some idiots that don't know what they're talking about. But I read the blog post, so I made it that far. But the idea is you can execute some JavaScript that's isolated from other JavaScript, so it can't like mutate data outside of it or nothing else can come in. So it's like the spirit of a container, but without having to spin up an entire computer to do it. And thus it's, you know, four times faster or whatever. It's incredible.
I wonder if it's just the same technology that powers like browser tabs. Basically, you know, like you spin up another.
Yeah, that's what it says. It says that this was basically developed by Google Chrome team.
Oh, wowzers. Well, I'm ready for that next wave.
I know things are getting weird, and here we are, you know, but like we talk about this future stuff, but also, you know, if you got some, you know, I also work on WordPress websites. I spent all weekend hacking away on a WordPress website. I work on my Rails app, and Rails is like really well suited for CodePen, and that we have all these permission models that we have to do and all that stuff. Works great. I'm not necessarily looking to Jamstack up CodePen. In that, you know, but we already do dabble in serverless functions, and we run containers for things. And like all this stuff it's just a big ecosystem of stuff. And you get to like, here's my website. It's a little bucket, and I'm going to fill my bucket with little technologies that I'm going to use, you know? That's what it's actually like, you know? Like, I know you're itching to hear some story of Jamstack and, you know, how Sephora is now all Jamstack or something.
Yeah,
that would be cool to read, but, like, the real Sephora is probably, like, a bucket that's pieced together full of all kinds of different crap. You know?
Yeah, it's on Magento because of the shipping rules. I mean, the story is probably that, like,
right.
Like, you know, gets down to that, so... Well, cool. That sounds fun. I wish I could have been.
Sorry, that was a lot. Yeah, well. That was neat.
Yeah, well. Well, cool. On my end, just working, and then my wife tore her ACL, and so I've been max parenting for a couple months here.
So is it crutches time forever?
She's better now. Had surgery, so better now. But that's just that's dominated probably
so
all my
sorry,
free time.
Jess.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. Hey, there you go. That's that's my life.
A little less Overwatch.
A little less Overwatch. I go to bed at 9 some days. Just like, I'm tired now. Go to bed. So.
9. Eesh, you
youngster. But I did have to like overhaul. I overhauled my whole rig. Basically, I have like two displays, display arms. Ended up buying a new motherboard, cooler, graphics card for my computer. Like I just was like, well, I'm just going to fix things. But my
really is it
my computer was
is it caused more problems or is it well, better?
You, I think knew about my computer problems. It would just shut down in podcasts or Skype calls or whatever.
It didn't happen that much on this show, but it, you know, I am aware that it did happen to you. You know, we always had good luck. It seemed to happen like right before.
Yeah, right before, which is convenient for my computer. But I think I don't, you know, what's weird is you build your own computer and you are now the person who has to fix it. It's like if you built your own car or something, it's like all the problems are your problems. There may be a shop you can take it to, but they'll be like, I've never seen this kind of car. It looks like you built it yourself. And so, I ended up ordering, I think, a new motherboard and processor. I think something happened and I either shorted or fried my old one and it was having problems. And I don't know. I want to send it to like a YouTuber and be like, do like CSI on this and tell me what happened to it. But,
that would be amazing.
Wouldn't that be cool? Do CSI and forensically tell me what happened to this motherboard, because I think it was the problem. So, but it's all fixed now and even better than before. Just, you know, no problem money can't solve, Chris. And you just throw Shop Talk bucks at it and it'll fix it. So.
Yeah, you'd think so. It's like existentially bothers me when there are problems that money can't buy. It's just like kind of comforting to know that, like, if I had the money or was willing to spend the money, that there would be some solution to this problem. But sometimes there's just not, you know, like there's just no contractor in this town where you can trust to do a bathroom. There's just nobody.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you money motivated?
Or, you know, I think for me, like, I eventually it was like, I'm just going to have to buy my way out of this problem. I mean, when it's crashing, like during work calls, like I need to find a solution. So that becomes like a business expense, obviously, even though it's a fun gaming computer too. I think I've realized, like with technology, or we probably talked about it on the show, you know, people with MacBook Pros that are like the S key quits working or whatever, or the touch bar quits working or whatever, like, you feel very powerless when you don't know when it's going to get better. You're on your like third motherboard or third MacBook and it's still not working. And you're just like, I don't know what's wrong. I'm a smart person.
But you feel empowered because you can swap out parts.
Well, yeah, I can swap out parts and, you know, that's cool. But yeah, like, I just know that feeling. It's like where you're just like, I don't, you know, I need this thing to do my job and I can't do my job. Like, or if I get a new one, a very expensive new one, I still might not be able to do my job. And that's always like frustrating. And that's not, I'm not trying to Mac versus PC it, because obviously my PC was falling down during Slack calls, but like, it's frustrating. I that feeling is very frustrating. Yeah. So
I take all kinds of crazy measures to prevent that kind of thing. Cause I can't even imagine having a 24-hour period where I just could do no work. Like I can't, like I'm just too busy for that type of downtime, you know, not to be all, wow, I'm the most important guy ever, but still it would stress me out. It's more about my personality than my station in life, you know? I used to pay, I don't do this anymore because we have this fancy business internet, but I used to pay two different internet companies to deliver internet to my
for
house
like a redundant,
because I couldn't
like
deal
backup?
With it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I worked from home. Oh. And that was a long time ago, so I don't necessarily recommend that. But I can just kind of smell this laptop is having problems and stuff. And last week I just ordered another one just in case. I might return it because it's being kind of cool now, but I can't, especially out here in Bend, I can't just run to the Apple store.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I need to.
No, that's frustrating. I know that feeling. I bought like I have this thing. It's like a crank wheel that has an Ethernet cable in it. And I ran it from my living room to my computer just so I'd have Wi-Fi or hardwired Ethernet for this call, for Shop Talk and gaming. But I just like, I'm going to hardwire in for Shop Talks now so that it's better.
Oh, yeah. So, I'm all hardwired all the time. We you should see this office. We get, you know, the craft CMS fellas, Brad, like wired, he like hand Etherneted the office. We have a huge rack with this monster router in it. You know, it's just one of those arbitrary pieces of technology where it's like mounted to the ceiling and you just look at it and you're like, I don't know what happens in that box, but it's badass. You know?
Yeah. Makes the office.
And it just basically runs Ethernet cables to our whole office. Even now I'm plugged in. I got hardcore Ethernet here in the booth.
In the booth.
It's awesome.
Wow, the booth is wired. That's sweet.
Heck yeah, it's wired. Mm. I love that. Yeah, just reduce possible problems. Love that. This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by Jetpack. You know, the WordPress plugin that does all kinds of stuff for your self-hosted WordPress site. I use it on every single self-hosted WordPress site I have because I just love the feature set. One of the feature set things that's pretty cool is you just flip it on. You know, there's a bunch of these like light switch features in Jetpack where you're just like, do you want this? Yes. Switch it on. Now you have it. You know, it requires no configuration, no fancy stuff. And you just get some improvement from it. One of them is that they have like an image CDN called Photon. So if you have no image solution other than just like hosting your own images on your own website, you'll almost certainly benefit from this. You just flip it on and then your images are hosted on their CDN called Photon, which is already good because CDN hosted images are just an improvement, of course, but it helps optimize them. And you know, because your site already does responsive images anyway, you have that. I've talked about this before. They just improved this feature. They call it Site Accelerator now that does your images as well, but it's starting to host more and more files on their CDN for you. So this new one is that anything that ships with WordPress Core, any file that they can count on that is hosted in that way that your site uses for some reason, when you flip this feature on, is also CDN hosted now. So that's pretty cool. I'm going to run some tests pretty soon, I think, on like a self-hosted WordPress site with none of this stuff turned on and then flip it on and see what kind of speed improvements are there. Because they're definitely there, especially if you test in different locations around the world, farther away from your kind of home-based server and all that. So the new Site Accelerator feature in Jetpack 6.7, I've just been like, hey, cool. Hey, thanks for the help.
Let's get some questions in. It is, after all, the Shop Talk Show, where we take your listener-submitted questions, and we really appreciate that. And, man, I have so much to say. This is, like, just my favorite part of Shop Talk is getting y'all's questions. So, here we have one from Morgan Bicker. I have a question about using 3D on the web. I have a personal project where I want to design and build a fake AI chip that will either move on scroll or the user can move it. A few years back, I remember WebGL being a good library for this. Is this still the case, or is there an even more efficient way of using 3D on the web? So I guess he has like a 3D model he wants to embed on a web page. Does that sound kind of like the...
Yeah, well, that's clutch, is that he wants to design and build it. This isn't just like, oh, my client sells bicycles and I want to have a 3D model of the bicycle. It's like, this is something that Morgan is designing, which makes me think of A-Frame, because I'm like, well, that's like, a chip seems like a combination of a bunch of rectangles and stuff, which A-Frame is like super good at having an API to draw, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Yeah, I mean, A-Frames can do like the embedded, like, scene, they call them scenes, like 3D scenes, and you can move it around yeah. and stuff like that. You get WASD keys, you know, for like walking around too. A-Frame is great for that, and then it goes up into like full screen, you know, virtual reality, like on your desktop, and then you put in a head-mounted display or cardboard, and there's 3D. You can add motion controllers, etc. That's maybe like if like you're just trying to use it as a design element, that might be super overkill. But you can like create an object, like a render 3D to a canvas, like a canvas element, using something like 3JS too. Like if you just want to like the metal yeah. is WebGL, like that's like the, oh man, I'm the computer science man on the WebGL. Like that's the lowest form. But then the abstraction above that is 3JS, which allows you to just be like, get this model that I designed in Blender or whatever software, 3D modeling software, Cinema 4D, whatever. I designed this model, use this model, or Maya, I guess would be it. Use this model, and then just spit it out with this texture or this material. What 3JS does. And then A-Frame is a web component-based abstraction around that. So you type out HTML instead of programming JavaScript. You type out HTML to render elements on a page. And so you're if you think of position absolute, you have a X coordinate, a top and a left or whatever, X and Y. In A-Frame, you have a position attribute with an X and a Y and a Z position. So you say X zero, you want it in the center, from the camera. Y one meter, basically, you want it 1 meter up off the ground, and then Z negative 10, you want it 10 meters away from you. And so it's a cool way to program 3D scenes. I really love it. And I just read, and this is probably a couple weeks old now, but from this show, but they figured out a way to make it very much faster, 2x faster. So A-Frame's going to be smoking. And so that's kind of very cool for A-Frame, because it was kind of, Oculus and all that. They have they control the hardware. They're not trying to run in a web browser, so it's very, very fast. But they figured out how to make A-Frame very fast, reducing the number of calls and garbage collections and stuff. So anyway, I hope that makes sense. The limitation here is you can't just have a 3D thing with a transparent background, because that's not how Canvas works. Canvas has to have a background color, right? Like a black or white or something, or blue or what,
Really? I didn't know that.
I think Canvas needs a background color, but I wonder, could you use something background blend mode,
maybe. Oh yeah. To get rid of it or whatever. Or I wonder if if you go even weirder, doesn't Firefox have that Moz element or Moz, where you can make the background some other DOM element?
Yeah, that would be cool.
That would be weird.
There we go.
Anyway, I know Devin Koh has a course, 3D for Designers, and I was this is about Cinema 4D, but I was I wonder if you can use this on the web. But you're kind of saying, well, that's cool, you could learn Cinema 4D, build your thing there, and then 3JS is the library that will help you get it over to the web.
So yeah. Totally possible. I think if you are... if you've done 3D for Designers, I think there's ways you can maybe start taking some of these modelings, some of these shadings, and start pulling them into the web. So, if you, that would be a good blog post for somebody if you wanted to write that. Cause there's rumors Apple is going to make a AR thing, right? A virtual reality thing. And even in their last iPad event, did you see all the artwork that came with that? It was just these beautiful Apple logos, but they're all kind of 3D rendered, or a lot of them were, and they're really beautiful. But anyway, so there's kind of
everybody's dipping their toes in this 3D.
Yeah, 3D, I think, has the potential to be pretty, add a depth, an element of depth, which I think is what the Morgan's kind of asking about. But it can add a depth, sense of depth that, the current flat web design doesn't offer. So,
good luck, Morgan. What else should we talk about here? Here's a one from Steve Polito here. I occasionally need to redevelop an existing site. So I might I need to go from WordPress and I'm going to move it to Drupal or something. So I usually just export the data as CSV and import the data into the new platform. Well, that's amazing if you've ever had any success at all with that, but cool.
Yeah. It's that easy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe it is, or maybe they have really good tools for that particular moving, This works well for sites that are mostly static, but I'm curious to know how one would migrate a more dynamic site. So he asks me about CodePen. It's since the database is always growing, which it is, think right now, there's, hundreds of database connections right now on CodePen, people building things, saving things. It's very, we can't just stop to migrate something, you know? So if CodePen were to move from Rails to Node, how would you do this? Well, first of all, that's interesting. That's not just because we would move from Rails to Node or something, you know? It doesn't mean that the database would have to move, you know?
Right.
Like, we use SQL, so, like, Node can use SQL too, you know? I think the more question here is, like, what if we needed to change the database? Like, we're going to move from SQL to Postgres or something. Mm-hmm. What would you do in that situation? And because I think what Steve is asking is, like, what do you do during the migration? Do you just shut down the site? Do you create some kind of API that, you know, can digest it, whatever, like... Do you do page redirects if it's a different platform, you know? And he's just curious about something like this. Like, how do you, like, port a large production site over to new architecture and new databases and that kind of thing? Good question.
No, this is very top of mind for me. I've been, like, working on a legacy Java application, you know, and we'd like to kind of modernize it a little bit. And, you know, but if you get into that and you're just like, how do we improve data? You know, like right now, to, like, update data for my dev environment, I have to, like, you know, curl some XML and stuff like that. And that's no good, you know? Yeah. So, the strategy we're looking at, I think, is kind of creating, like, fortifying the existing API, but really building that out. And you basically write a spec for the API, right? Like this, you know, and you can write tests, but, like, I'm going to curl this URL, the API URL, and I expect these fields to come back and it should come.
Exactly.
So you have a test, and then, you know, some years is kind of what we're looking at, but like years down the line, we might be like, okay, now the front end can just hit the API and we don't have to worry. And then that gives you freedom that your content management system, whatever that system, you know, Rails, Drupal, WordPress, you know, whatever that's written in, you can actually hot swap it as long as it agrees to that original contract of, like, it expects these fields to come back. But, you know, like, WordPress and Drupal, they kind of control your database, right? Like, they sort of name the tables, and everything for WordPress goes into WP posts.
You can't just be like, I'm going to use WordPress, but I'm going to use Mongo instead.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not happening.
So, you know, I think you have to, like, build that layer to where the user can go from A, you know, system A to system B pretty quickly. But I think you're going to have to kind of, like, be like, okay, system B, we need to, the new system, system B, we need to, like, populate it with some data and make sure it returns the same data, agrees to the new contract. But then you may need to, like, for a little bit, write data to both places, you know, just to make sure it gets concurrent.
Yeah, that's another part of this equation that I was going to mention. That's exactly right, is that if you know that you need to switch over and it's a totally different database, API it, like Dave said, like, there's got to be some abstraction level there in the middle so that you're not, you know, you're not, like, actually writing SQL queries. Like, the Rails version of this is Active Record, and that's already kind of an abstraction away from asking for data, which is kind of cool, frankly. And then it's an SQL database, but you're moving to Mongo or something. Then you for a while, even on production, you're going to be sending data to both locations. So you have an exact copy of the data. It just gets written twice, you know?
Like, you want those to be as close as possible. I mean, if it's, you know, I don't know, if it's 100 records, you know what? Shut down the database, run the query, they'll do the migration, you know, like I would,
well, sure.
Yeah. Like, if it's going to be fast, like, let's do it the shutdown way, you know, like, where hopefully users don't notice. But if it's in the, you know, I don't know, very enterprise scale, hundreds of, hold on, my dog has seen the mailman apparently. But if it's in the hundreds of thousands of records, millions of records, I mean, you need probably, to like do a, one of these more serious migrations. But I would hope if you are managing millions of records, you maybe have a team that at least somebody knows how to do that very well. So, but if it's in the hundreds or thousands, man, I'm maybe in team shut it, go into maintenance mode, like at midnight, do a midnight operation. I don't know. What do you think?
Sure, yeah. And then I would think, but if you're not doing it that way, even after you're doing this double writing so you can move over, that you, even after the move, you're continuing to do the double writing and stuff, and just in case you need to roll back. And,
in case you have to go back. Oh, yeah.
It'll be a big job, but it can be done. You have to write out all the requirements first, like what could happen. Like a code pen, like, or could we make it part of the marketing, say, hey, we got to go down for 3 days or a week or something, but when we come back, it's going to be great. You know, even freaking Apple does that for their store when for some reason they need to shut down their entire store to add a product to it, which is a little mind-blowing, but who knows what kind of architecture they have.
For Apple it works out, right? Like they get a big, like, oh my gosh, it's gonna happen, it's gonna be a new thing I'd send money for. So
that would be unacceptable for us, for people that pay monthly to use the service, just be like, we're just going to shut down. So our requirements, as we have written them, would be like, okay, how can we do this in a zero downtime kind of way? And we would just architect our way out of it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I also think, like, yeah, it's all in communication ops too, right? Like, I know I play a video game called Overwatch, and they have downtimes all the time, you know? And so it's just communicated. So it's never bad. It's just, you know, they just make sure they communicate it. So
this episode of Shop Talk Show was brought to you in part by Sentry. That's Sentry.io. It's an error tracking app that, in my opinion, is not optional for your web app. You need something that is tracking errors, how often they happen, and telling you when they happen, especially if they're happening frequently, and getting, you know, notified, and even possibly routing those errors to the right developer, all stuff that Sentry can do. Relying on your customers to do that for you is just foolhardy, you know? Like, you don't want to be like, just be pushing out bugs and then just being like, hey, who sees a problem, you know? So have the whole world QA your app for you. It's just rude, kind of, and not good for business. You know, anytime a customer sees an error is bad news. They're trying to use your app to do something, probably paying you money to do that thing, and it's really a bummer when there's errors. We can't anticipate everything in the whole world that they're going to do on your app. I mean, ideally, you have all kinds of tests. And believe me, we try to do that, you know. I mean, every app I've ever worked on, it just feels wonderful to have tests. Every test you write is like almost a warming feeling of, oh, yes, another, you know, guard against a problem that may happen. But there's no way you're going to get infinite coverage. I mean, it's just there's too many permutations of something a user might be able to do. So be smart, code smart, have lots of tests, but also have error tracking like Sentry in place so that when things go wrong, you're notified of them. You know, and you can fix stuff. I mean, half our lives of software development is fixing problems. It's just the way it is. It's just the way it is. So thanks so much, Sentry, for your support. Everybody else out there who's hasn't checked it out, go do it. Speaking of communication, James Hammond is asking about Marco.js, which I literally heard about from this question, but has a crap load of stars on GitHub, so apparently it's a thing. Looks like it's from eBay. Have you guys ever worked with Marco.js? From everything I've seen, has potential to be a React killer. However, I think it's relatively unknown and not super supported outside of eBay. I've been interested in creating a project. I haven't had the time. I know we get framework fatigue, but this does look really cool, and it's powering a pretty big platform right now. I wonder if you've heard of people using it. Have you seen this?
I have not, and now I'm looking at it.
Looks pretty nice.
Yeah.
Look at this. Look at how they do. Look at how they do CSS. Looks like inline styles are built in, but it's really bizarre. You just have this style. What would you call that? Are you on the homepage for Marco.js.com?
It's a style class. Like it's,
but you're not.
Tree.
It's just like a global object.
Yeah.
You don't even have to declare it as a const or anything.
It's not even like a style tag. Yeah. It's like a interesting. So I assume these are kind of like a Marco files, like view files of some kind that get parsed into something.
Yeah, it even looks more, the syntax even looks some amazingly even cleaner than view somehow.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go by my, 10KB gzip, that's all right. I'm going to go by my standard answer here. I feel like if it looks good to you and looks intuitive, it probably is good and intuitive for you. I can't give it like the gold seal of approval, but I can say that I like what it's offering. It seems like the state stuff is pretty simple, you know? And that's kind of what I'm after for like these reactive component libraries. I'd like to see it just in the marketing. I'm going, you know, every Vue does this, React does this, you know, it's always the on button click increment thing. And I know that's like the standard, but I hate it. I just, it's like the A/B tests or no, it's sorry. It's like the testing tutorial where it's like, you know, add 1 + 2 = assert = 3, you know, it's just like, that's cool. That means nothing to like my application at all. You know, I know I'm supposed to, as a computer scientist, be able to abstract what that means or whatever, but like, I need to see more, like I need to see when it gets bad, you know? But you know, I think it's cool.
My initial reaction was like React killer, roll eyes, you know, like I've never even heard of it. And like half the battles, even if it is better, it's such an uphill battle to unseat these huge libraries anyway, like even better ones. It's less like you just can't, how are you? Good luck, you know, the developer mindshare is a hard battle to lose here. But I will admit this looks very cool. You know, another thing that worries about me is that you, it looks like you can't use it unless you have some processor thing for the mm-hmm. types of files. And it's like, you know how it's, some libraries don't take that approach necessarily. Like Vue, you can make these nice Vue components that offer some syntactic niceties, but you can just use it in the browser too. It doesn't look like this can be used in the browser. They even have their own little version of Pug in here, it looks like, which is bizarre.
Yeah. You know, but if it's backed by a big company, like, you know, maybe
that eBay.
Yeah, maybe that helps you, you know, like, you know, it's probably not disappearing next year. Me personally, I would maybe do some investigating on the community. That's always very important to me, you know, because if you have problems or need answers or blog posts or whatever, does that exist, you know? And then it says it's made by eBay open source. That's cool. Don't get me wrong. But is it one person at eBay? And if they quit, what happens to the project? Because that's the thing too. I would try to suss that out just from a maintainability standpoint. But I don't know. That's the thing. If it looks good to you, I think it's good. I don't know. It probably works. Yeah,
I'm clicking around in here and I'm like, dang, this is nice.
Hey.
Oh, no.
We made a mistake.
No, I like the conditional rendering is. Oh, yeah, maybe. Of course, you can't have a library like this that doesn't claim it's the fastest thing in the universe. But
yeah, it's got ops. I like per a second, lot of baby.
Yeah. So many ops.
Question. Let's say it is better, like quantifiably, quantitatively better. Are you switching? Like what does it take for Chris Coyer to rewrite projects, Footpin projects?
Oh, I'm not going to do that because there's using it and then at what scope or scale,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're like, let's say I was going to read, like I have a little website that I haven't touched in a while called quotesondesign.com. It's just like a little thing. I've had it forever, and I just keep
it. It's an API. It spits out a quip, right?
It does, but it's a WordPress site, so it hits its own API. But I already have the kind of – it's already kind of a little API. Like, I could decide to – this might be fun to build it like and put it on Netlify or something. Like, leave my WordPress hosting somewhere, but also, like, have a static front end for it just to, like, dip my toes into that. I would try Marco. Why not, you know? That's, like, a scale that I could digest it on early on or make some demos in it or something. But to like buy into it at a whole like company level for a massive product that we're currently rewriting in React anyway, and like already having success and happiness with that, like, that's going to take a lot more persuading, you know? Like, what would the advantage be? Like, I'm not going to switch because I like the syntax like 5% more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not enough. The speed, maybe, you know, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that's, you know, the speed, we don't really have client side ops speed. If anything, is there's so much other speed battles to fight that are more significant than like how fast your for loops are that I don't care, you know?
Right, right. Well, and some of it too is just like the getting the product out and then iterating on that, you know? But like, you just wanna.
But if you break up everything in APIs nicely, that gives you a lot of freedom too. I like that. Like, maybe like that's a big movement almost in building websites, is how much freedom do I have to piece in different components? Like, if I make a really nicely spec'd out API, maybe then I can move backends more safely, because as long as that backend communicates over that same API, then we know we're safe and it's well tested and all that. And you know.
I agree. This is something I've been thinking about. I don't know if you read that Adi Asmani Netflix post about Netflix making the
was it server side React?
Yeah, basically they quit React on the marketing pages of Netflix, and they increased conversions, they sped up the website 50%, and it only serves like a little bit of vanilla JavaScript and static HTML, and bingo, bingo, it's out. And
so is it Gatsby or something?
No, I think it's just their own like render to string kind of thing. But they just spit out the HTML part, and then they only use a little bit of non-React, like they cut React out of the front end too, because once React like tries to mount or whatever, it occupies the main thread and you know, tries to bundle the whole, you know, Netflix app or whatever, and like that's like brutal. But anyway, they made Netflix faster just by kind of going to a static site with like very slim JS and CSS. And I've just sort of wondered, like I wonder if that's sort of the future of like, or I don't know, a future system potentially, like something that manages your static content or your dynamic blogging content, and your like backend app, like all those are kind of contained into a system. I know they need to be different, but maybe there's like, maybe it's like some routing technology or something like that, that really kind of like tailors itself to what you're trying to build, you know? Like you can do it now, but it's kind of hard to make like a server like spit out like one, I don't know, an Angular app for this page, a Marco app for that page, a React app for that, you know, like that's a lot of kind of work to do. I don't know. I just wonder if there's like something that makes it easy to kind of have this, I don't know. Maybe I just need to learn Nginx. But I just think there's like, I think like what you're saying, that portability of the backend or whatever, like, so you can experiment in these, like, I think that's a big deal. And I just, flexibility, I like maybe flexibility as a feature is going to be cool. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe one day. Have you heard about web components? I'll stop.
I'm using one.
You got one?
I finally had a good... I got one. I'm working on a CSS tricks redesign, and we slapped one in there. That's
woo.
It's pretty good, I think.
Nice.
Yeah.
You got.
I'm trying to think of an excuse to use Houdini too, but no, it's nice. It's kind of like a. I mostly used it as like to give myself syntactic sugar. I was like, this HTML, like I see what this is, and to reproduce this thing, which is a combination of. It's mostly just like a somewhat complicated chunk of SVG that's configurable. So it's like, but what I really wanted is it takes like a couple of attributes and some content, and then it does something with them. So I'm just going to invent a new web component, and it's going to have a handful of attributes, and it's going to take the content inside the tag. And then all the magic is abstracted away into the JavaScript, you know, like mm-hmm. It takes this template and plops all the complicated template-y stuff in there. I don't have to see it. I don't care about it. which is, that's kind of how and why I'm using it. It's very like aesthetic almost. But I like it. I like it. It's got a, it's a nice API. It does everything I need it to do and gives me a nice tag that I can use in my HTML rather freely. Yeah. I can kind of see where you're coming from. It was, I hate to admit that your like longtime tirade on HTML imports has, it was slightly lost on me, but now that I'm using this a little bit, is part of that I can't use, like, there's no real reason to, I don't need JavaScript. This thing has nothing to do with JavaScript. Really, it doesn't. None. Other than the instantiation of the component itself. Was there some world in which that I could have constructed this component through templating and such without any, the use of any JavaScript? Probably not.
No. I mean, like, web components itself, like, required, this is a long conversation. I think that's one of the faults of web components is that it required JavaScript. Otherwise, like, if it hadn't required JavaScript, I think, like, all of WordPress would have switched over 100 years ago. But that's just me. I'm just saying, what do I want to say? I think like the dream is just that, yeah, you can kind of like start assembling these syntactic sugar bits and start abstracting that out. And that's a folder, that's a file called whatever, SVG icon or whatever, my, you know, fancy widget.html. And that's all that's on your server. I mean, now it can be, you know, fancy widget.js, and that's good too, but now it's in your JavaScript build pipeline. It's not just a static, you know, it's now comes with a dozen other things. It's not just a HTML file on a server, you know, it's now a JS file in a build process. And so that's where I think my difference lies. So,
in this case, the whole, I guess it's, yeah, it's really, I mean, even the template itself is in JavaScript.
Which is, you know, I think good and fine too. I mean, I don't know. There's been some movement there. And even like I had a conversation with like Jake Archibald on the Twitters and, you know, his understanding was kind of, no, like web components is kind of for like complex chunks, like maps or something like that, you know, kind of more like beefy, recyclable pieces, you know, and I just was like, well, that's interesting because, you know, for CodePen, like a code editor or something, just like CodeMirror or something like that, like that's all bundled into that. Like his thinking is like they're kind of more, or as I understood it, so I don't want to misrepresent, was more for. So
you wouldn't make like a title, like a My Title component that, you know, had some. Inserted a bunch of random emojis all around an H1 tag because that's just not beefy enough.
Right. That's not like, it's not a complex enough thing to like justify the bootstrapping of the web component. So, or the lazy loading or the, I guess right now web components are all blocking if you went with the HTML imports, but now they're all in JavaScript so they can be async. I think there's a potential, or what I wanted was just, you know, a world where I could write websites using HTML, but that is not a world I have right now. So
it is just absolutely fascinating, right? Because the browsers are like, they've done this, they've made web components, and like, what's going to happen like 5 years from now? Are they going to be evolved, or are they? There's a world, there's all these paths. There's one of them in which that they just lost. They just, nobody cares if nobody uses them. They're just like, well, we lost that one. There's really, I don't know that there's been a strong story. Maybe Smile is the closest thing on the web that has followed that path where it's this big complicated spec and it's all but ignored on the web, you know, besides, but, you know, what is that path? Or is there a path in which they get really good and it becomes the de facto way to build things that even libraries build on top of? Because I think there's a narrative like that happening now, which is, you know, React people largely ignore web components, but they don't have to. That's almost like a cultural thing. Like, they could be embracing them right now. They just aren't for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like this cultural. Well, and I think that comes back to, like, And this was part of the discussion too. I think like the marketing of web components being tied to Polymer positioned it as a competitor to
React.
It was
a disaster.
And so, but in fact, web components does not depend on Polymer. You don't need Polymer to use web components. However, Twist, like you start using web components, you're like, oh, I probably need something like Polymer. Just like, because it's so low level, you don't have like templating, which is the number one thing you're going to need is an if statement in your template. So now you have to be like, okay, I walk that back. I'm going to use Polymer now. So in some ways they were tied together, but, and I think that's, again, back to my tiny grievances with web components. I think that it was part of the original design. One required JavaScript to bootstrap the element. I think if they could have come up with something that didn't require that, it would have got more adoption as HTML imports. But then B, if it had like templating in it, so you could just use web components without buying into Google's Polymer deal, that would have been awesome too.
Well, JavaScript has gotten in, or, you know, the web platform has gotten into the business of templating to some degree. I mean, there's template literals and tag template literals and stuff that are kind of, the design of them is templating.
And what I think Google's now kind of pitching it, maybe over Polymer, is this lit element thing, which is lit HTML, where you use template literals to almost like JSX to spit out a template, right? And
I love this.
It's pretty cool. But so instead of creating a, you know, class my element extends HTML element, you say class my element extends lit element. And then you get a few of these kind of superpowers built into the lit HTML, like lit element.
Yeah, I mean, I think the primary one is efficient re-rendering, right? That it's not just, you're not just taking a DOM element and saying, oh, when I need to re-render it, just re-render all of it, you know?
Yeah.
Because that can be inefficient. And that's why people are so into React, because React has all this super magic that it only re-renders exactly what it needs to be super fast. And so by not doing that, you're not benefiting from whatever magic React. So what can I do instead? And their answer is, oh, well, we do that too. We do lit HTML.
Yeah, and it basically, I think what it does is writes like a template to the DOM, and then it just keeps track of what can be changed in that template. So it's like pretty fast stuff. So anyway.
Yeah. There's Hyper HTML does the same thing. And I just saw like a 500-byte library just this week that it didn't do the re-rendering for you, but what it did do was you could make a template literal string and then put refs in it. So if you needed to reach into that literal to change something efficiently yourself, you can. You don't have to re-render the whole string. You still have like DOM references to the internal bits of a larger chunk, which I thought was very clever.
Yeah, I wonder what, you know, heading into 2019, I wonder what the landscape's going to look like. It could be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
React hooks, lit element, you know, all this stuff. Yeah,
I'm starting to get a little yawny on this React hooks. Then we talked about it at all.
We did.
It's just okay. Let's forget it then.
But I think we talked about it. Its explosiveness. That was kind of our thing. But anyway.
Yeah, it's like, okay, now you have access to state in a stateless component, or not, I know stateless component isn't the right word, like a, what do they call them in React when they don't have,
functional,
when they don't have their own class, it's just like a string, like it's basically, they have a name, whatever.
I'm blanking.
The ones that just, they just renderless components, I don't know, whatever.
All right, yeah, thank you, dear listener, we'll get back to you next week. Thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher choice. Be sure to star heart favorite up, that's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. If you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one, because people want to hire people like you. And Chris, you got anything else you'd like to say?
ShopTalkShow.com. Ta-da!